Did you know some travel credit cards offer 10x points on your spending? Don't miss out on big rewards for your next trip. NerdWallet lets you compare smart travel credit cards side by side, curated by an expert team of finance nerds. What could future you do with better travel rewards? A free flight? A room upgrade? Don't wait to make smart financial decisions.
Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet, finance smarter. In recent weeks, we've really focused on some ways that listeners can boost their income. So whether that's through starting your own side business and growing your network like Holla talked about, or when we talked with local realtor Alan about diving into investing in real estate, well, what better way to test the waters? While you are away, your home could also earn extra income.
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you're traveling, because that's all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com, designed for work.
Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com. Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today, we are answering your listener questions.
You know, I was about to introduce this episode as if our listeners were kind of like pen pals who we write to, except for instead of writing, we send audiograms back and forth. except that you go, it's an ongoing relationship, and this is kind of like a more of like a one-time thing.
That's right. Although you can submit more questions if you want, I guess, right?
And like, some listeners have. Yeah. There's some listeners who we've actually heard from a decent bit.
You know, it's funny.
Do you feel bad that we're not able to get to every single one of those?
I do. I wish we could get to all of them. Yeah. I feel like we get to a big chunk of them.
We get to most of them.
But yeah, can't get to every single one. I will say,
did you ever have a pen pal though? Before you move on,
as a kid, I think in elementary school maybe there was some sort of.
Weren't we all required
setup
to have a pen pal?
I think so.
Like I feel like when
is
we
that
were
a thing these days?
I don't even know.
Well, although we actually do one of the nonprofits we support is helping a family in South America, and we do have like a pen pal relationship.
Yeah, you write letters,
which is really cool for the girls to experience. I love that.
All right, sorry, I didn't want to. You were going to say something.
Oh, I was just going to say that one of our mutual friends, he texted me after our last listener questions episode, and he said, I was so impressed by the variety of people that reach out to the show.
Oh, nice.
Just that they are all different ages. They live in all sorts of different parts of the country. And I had to like sit back and think like, yeah, our listeners are from all sorts of different walks of life. And
that's true.
Some live in New York City and some live in like the
New
sticks.
New Mexico.
Yeah, New Mexico. Like, and some live in Australia or Ireland, whatever. And it is
just very cool.
It is cool to see that there are people from all over with all sorts of different questions that they've got going on around their money.
Yeah, so on that note, some of the questions we're going to answer today pertain to student loans. A listener has a question about investing money for a wedding, as well as another listener who's talking about some money-saving baby hacks, just different ways him and his partner can save when it comes to the cost of raising a kid. So speaking of variety, we almost have the entire life cycle of an early adult. But I'm looking forward to those questions plus a few others during this episode.
Okay. Well, before we get to those questions, we'll get to them in just a second. Matt, I wanted to mention probably one of my biggest frustrations when it comes to the internet is when you're trying to cancel a subscription.
Oh, yeah.
And some people make it easy.
It can be annoying,
which
though.
I appreciate. Or an easy unsubscribe link in an email. I always appreciate that.
Those are nice. The worst are when they send you another email to confirm that you do, in fact, want to unsubscribe.
Are you sure? And you're like, yes. Yes, I'm sure.
Like, don't ask me again.
Exactly. Well, the other day, I was unsubscribing from a publication that you and I sometimes read. We found that we were not reading it frequently enough, and the monthly price was like $35. And we're like, yeah, I don't think we're getting that amount of value out of it. So let's axe it. And then they were like, well, wait a second. I know we made it really easy to sign up, but it's not going to be so simple when it comes to canceling. And so that was annoying to me. I had to jump through extra hurdles. I actually had to like talk to someone via some chat. At least it wasn't on the phone. That is the ultimate worst when they're like, now call this number. And you're like, I was able to sign up online. Why can't I do the exact same thing when I'm canceling? So, I just wanted to note that as a general pet peeve. And I think companies out there, if you value the people that subscribe to you, you're not doing yourself any favors by making it harder on them to cancel. You're just creating stronger enemies, I think, when they do eventually cancel.
So, I mean, the same thing is true when it comes to credit cards. I actually recently canceled a credit card, and you sign up for a credit card online only. Like, you fill out the application, and within, like, you know, like a minute, you are either approved or not approved. But I recently canceled a card, and you got to hop on the phone. I can only think of a single credit card where I was able to actually close that account online. Everybody else, you always have to make that phone call. It's super annoying, but I'm glad that you got that sorted out.
Is that the
company card is attached to that subscription?
Yes. Okay. So now we're not being billed for that anymore. But there was this great SNL skit. I don't really watch SNL, but I randomly stumbled upon this one, and it was Kieran Culkin, who's in the hit show Succession, and he was like him trying to cancel his cable subscription, and they're like, yes, but tell me why. And he's like, because I broke up with my girlfriend, and they're like, but please tell me how the breakup precipitated, and like getting all these things. And it's true, it's like obviously an exaggeration, but that's exactly what happens when you try to cancel cable or internet or something too.
It feels like that
they want to get all up in your business. But we'll link to that skit in the show notes, I guess.
I haven't watched SNL in a while. Kate and I, we used to watch it religiously, but it's been a couple seasons now since we've tuned in.
It's just not as funny anymore.
Yeah. All right, let's introduce the beer you and I are enjoying this episode. It's called Hatch Me Outside. This is a Hatch Chili Pepper Blonde Ale by Crosstown Brewing Company. You showed up with this one, and so I'm looking forward to enjoying it and sharing our thoughts on this one at the end of the episode.
Yeah, this was I brought back from my most recent trip to Memphis. My brother-in-law hooked me up with some Memphis beers while I was
Cha-ching.
There, so figured I'd share. All right, let's get to the topic at hand, Matt. We are answering listener questions, and for anybody listening, if you want us to answer your question on an upcoming episode, we'd love to hear it. Just go to howtomoney.com/ask. There are simple instructions there for you to submit your audio question so we can take it on an upcoming episode. But let's get to the first one. This one is about student loans.
Hey, Matt and Joel. This is Ian from Los Angeles. I've been listening since the early days, and I really appreciate your guys' point of view and plain speaking. I just started a job with a 1% matching 401k. But I've been investing in Acorns for about 3 years now on my own. I still have student loan debt. The highest is at 3.86%. No credit card debt. However, with payments and interest starting again in 2022, I'm wondering if I should close out my Acorns account and put the balance towards ending my student loan debt. The balance is just about the same as my Acorns account. I'm currently on track to eliminate the debt anyway in summer 2022, but I'd really not like to pay any interest if I can. Does this plan make sense? And if so, what tax implications could I be in for? Thanks as always for your help, guys. And if you're ever out in LA, give me a holler.
Ian, thanks for your question. And Matt, it would be nice to get back to LA at some point, wouldn't it?
Ooh, yeah. We took a trip out there. What's that?
Two, three years ago. Got a chance to hit up Modern Times and...
Oh my gosh.
What was the...
Monkish.
Monkish, yes. Oh, that was...
Monkish. Very good beer.
Delightful place to get beer. So yeah, Ian, we'll let listeners know next time we're in Los Angeles and get a hang out together at a local brewery.
Totally.
And I gotta say, Matt, one of the things that Ian said was 1% was what his company was matching in the 401k. That stuck out to me as abysmal. And not a smart move on that company, because there are, I don't know, especially in the current job market, there are a lot of employees who are looking around, considering other options, and something what maybe to that employer seems small, like, yeah, 1% match, we'll do that. that's not enough to retain top tier talent. And so I could see Ian at some point saying like, let me like scour the job boards and see if there's something, maybe I can increase my pay and have better benefits on the back end. I think talented folks really view that as a meaningful benefit, and companies should act accordingly.
Yeah, not only talented folks, but just informed folks, right? Because I think it used to be when pensions were a thing and before 401k matching was widespread, maybe 1% would have been fine. But as folks are becoming more educated, as we talk more about our finances here on the show, and as folks talk about them more in their own lives, I think that gets them familiar with the topic. It gets them more comfortable talking about it, because in the end, what it oftentimes is going to come down to, it's either, finding a new job, but asking their boss for increased benefits. And what that means is it coming down to you as an individual having that conversation. So I think it can be helpful just, you know, talking about this in your real life, talking about this with your friends. This is one of those conversations where, yes, you definitely can figure out some of the information on a site like Glassdoor, where you've got the, you know, the benefits listed out. But even just being comfortable talking about it on a personal level, I guess. But Ian, let's go ahead and get to the heart of your question. Should you be paying off the student loans more quickly? And, you know, the TLDR is nope.
Which means?
Don't do it.
Too long didn't read? Is that what that means?
Too long didn't read, yeah.
Okay.
So, you know, we get the desire to avoid paying interest, but if the highest rate on those student loans is still sub 4%, then there are better places to be putting those dollars, especially given where things stand with inflation at the current moment. Your student loan interest rate is actually looking pretty good. Having debt is never a good thing, but when you are comparing debt interest rates, what you currently have isn't terrible. And then, Ian, you know, you mentioned tax implications as well. If your money is in the standard Acorns Invest account, it's basically a brokerage account. So you'll be paying tax on the gains that you pull out from your account, although probably at the favorable capital gains tax rate, since it sounds like you have had this account around for a long time. But that's something to keep in mind. You will be paying tax on money that you pull out.
Yeah. And Matt, what you said was, hey, it's a really low interest rate, and that means you shouldn't prioritize paying off the student loan more quickly than you need to, especially because inflation is so high. And I think that's a great point, because we would prefer for Ian instead to focus on growing his money while paying off that low interest rate debt as agreed. And especially since it sounds like he's going to be able to get rid of it either way in short order. And just give a little personal story here. When I first started learning about personal finance, I got maybe a little too fixated on my student loans. I had not a whole lot of student loan debt, something along the lines of like 12 grand. And I remember at one point, as I was starting to earn money in like my first real job, putting a big chunk, or for me, what was a huge chunk at that point, $2,000 towards those loans. Mm-hmm. And I thought I was doing the right thing. I was like, this is great. But
debt is dumb. That was the mantra of a lot of people. Do everything possible to make sure that you eliminate all debt from your life.
Exactly. And so my interest rate, though, was even better. I think mine was like 1.7 percent.
Oh, wow.
I got like student loans in the heyday of student loans. And so that is almost free money. And obviously it's $2,000. It's paying off debt. Like, it wasn't a fatal move. Like, it didn't wreck any of my financial goals. It's just one of these tiny mistakes that I made along the way. And I would have been better served to get that money into a Roth IRA, because at that point I was not maxing out my Roth IRA. I just didn't have enough income. And so I should have prioritized that instead. And that's kind of where I want to point Ian, is like, hey, it's not a bad idea to pay off this debt more quickly. But for me, that's one of those tiny things I remember doing, and I'm like, man, I could have done better.
Yeah, you could have definitely earned, especially too, during the time period where,
exactly,
when I know that you would have put down that $2,000 chunk, had you invested that money instead, it would have done much better for you than 1.67 or whatever.
Yeah, it was literally like 13 years ago, like right at the start of the bull market. So yeah, but bad timing to pay off a less than 2% debt.
Yeah, so Ian, you know, that's what we want to see you focus on with those extra dollars. We'd recommend for you to take a look at our money gears. We'll link to them in the show notes, but we've come up with 7 money gears, which are basically like a money order of operations. And low interest debt doesn't become a priority until gear 6. And so there are just a lot of other financial priorities that you'll want to pursue with vigor first. So keep that money where it is. Don't pull that money out of your Acorns account to pay off your student loans. And we also, you know, we mentioned the Acorns Invest account. We hope that this money is actually in the Acorns later Roth IRA. If not, we would recommend that you open up a Roth IRA and make that your number one investing account priority after getting that 401k match.
The paltry match.
Yeah. I mean, hey, 1%, you know.
It's not nothing.
If he's making, you know, $70,000, you know, if he's getting a 1% match of $700 a year from his employer, I'll take that.
Yes.
That's still hundreds of dollars. And you know, like you mentioned, Joel, fortunately, his student loan debt should be gone pretty quickly. He's talking about having it paid off by the end of the year. And so I wouldn't stress too much about this, Ian.
Yeah. It sounds like it's not going to linger indefinitely or for 10 plus years or more. It's going to be gone in short order anyway. And so this is really just kind of like a short-term optimization tactic that we're talking about. I think it's worth mentioning too, Matt, that, you know, our money gears make most sense from a purely financial standpoint, right? It's like, here's how the math works and here's what we think.
If you want to mathematically do the very best correct thing, money gears.
Yes,
all the
you
way.
Don't pay off a 3% debt. You instead invest to get a tax break and, you know, start earning hopefully higher returns than that. But that's really if you're only looking at the numbers. And we do want to acknowledge, at least for Ian and for others, that sometimes we, Matt and I included, make moves with our money that may not be the most optimized from an accounting perspective.
Sure.
Sometimes it's just trying to give ourselves a psychological benefit. And so, yeah, even though it might not be the mathematically best move, paying off debt with a low interest rate could make sense if that means you're going to be able to stick with your financial plan, if it's going to give you the encouragement that's needed to kind of keep moving forward in those other areas that you're pursuing when it comes to your finances, and if it's also going to relieve some of that stress for you at the same time, if it's going to make you more able to sleep better at night, I would say that is another reason that it might make sense to pay off debt, even if the numbers don't necessarily dictate that's the best move to make.
Exactly. That's why we are okay if an individual wants to pay off their house early. We don't think it's the best thing from a financial standpoint.
And we're not going to do it, but hey.
Exactly, we're not going to do it. But if for you, you are always going to be able to sleep better at night, if you know that, you know what, at least we've got this home, we've got this roof over our heads, we are okay with that. We just want to make sure that you can make that decision from a place of understanding. We want you to have the knowledge that that isn't necessarily the best thing for you based on what the stock market has returned over the past 40, 60, you know, 80 years.
Yeah, for sure. All right, Matt, we got more questions to get to, including one about rental properties and depreciating that rental property. Should they do it or not? We'll get to that and more right after this. Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So, if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. They are committed to high ethical standards and even had to pass a rigorous exam before they could become a CFP professional.
They offer financial planning and services that take a more comprehensive view of your financial and personal circumstances and are customized for your needs. Certified financial planner professionals can offer advice on a wide range of issues like reviewing your investment portfolio's allocation, handling an inheritance, rolling over a company retirement plan, building education savings, and so much more.
That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org. I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach every single summer. We've already got that trip to St. Simons on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host. Or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. Spring cleaning is kind of an annual rite of passage. We've all got to do it, minimize the junk that we have in our house. Emily and I, we just cleaned our closets out. It took hours, but it was so worth it. Now we've only got stuff in there that we love, and it's easier to find everything too. And so, you know, while cleaning your closets is helpful, well, there's something else you can do for your family this spring. Shopping for life insurance with Policy Genius, for example, is a really important part of your financial planning for the year.
That's right. Yeah. And here is the thing that's important to remember, because you might be thinking you don't need to check out Policy Genius because you've got a policy through work. But even if you have a life insurance policy through your job, it may not offer you enough protection for your family's needs, and it may not follow you if you leave your job. With Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million of coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams. Policy Genius works for you, not the insurance companies, and that means they don't have an incentive to recommend one insurer over another, so you can trust their guidance.
Save time and money and provide your family with a financial safety net using Policy Genius. Head to PolicyGenius.com to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's PolicyGenius.com.
If you're listening to this podcast right now and you're a small business owner, listen up. Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're actually choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers. They do everything from hyper-targeting best fit prospects through campaign optimization. Upswell Marketing's unique approach includes direct mail, search engine marketing, and social media ads, and has fueled more than 10,000 small business success stories. Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies. Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
All right, we are back. This is a listener question Monday episode for you. And before we get to that investment property question, let's take a question from a listener who is asking about investing money for her wedding.
Hey, Joel and Matt. This is Kristen from Forest, Virginia, and I just had a short-term investing question. I was recently provided the lump sum for a future wedding from my parents, and I am not currently anywhere near getting married. So I wanted to try to invest that money so that when I do get married, I have it easily accessible and hopefully have grown a profit. So I just wanted to get some advice on how best to invest. I am currently maxing out my Roth IRA and am contributing a decent amount to my 401k. Any help that you guys can provide would be greatly appreciated.
All right, Kristen, thanks so much for that question. And that is super nice of your parents. You know, I don't know if they're trying to incentivize you to
listen,
to get someone to seal the deal, but they're like, here's a chunk of money. You want to get married sometime soon?
Yeah, was that overly suggestive? I don't know.
Either way, it's incredibly nice and kind and generous of them. But a side note, you know, if parents want to give their children money, it can be helpful to give little bits here and there while you're alive instead of waiting until you die. For one, you get to see your children enjoy it now, which is super cool. And, you know, it's often most helpful for your kids in those earlier years when they're first getting their financial lives in order. And then lastly, kids don't have to worry about paying taxes on the money that they're gifted, and parents don't have to worry about taxes on the money that they are gifting up to $16,000 this year. But even if they give beyond that, parents aren't likely going to have to pay taxes because of the lifetime exclusion rule. But we're not going to get into that. We'll save that for we'll save that for another question.
No, that's a great point. When you're giving money, like doing it earlier and more often, I think is a good way to do this. And so, yeah, giving money to a child who is going to be getting married for specific purposes like that too.
Maybe a down payment for a first-time home buyer. I think there's a lot of first-time home buyers out there who might could use some assistance.
Exactly. Or that first Rivian truck. I don't know. Just I'm just like, just in case my parents are listening.
Little hint, you know? Nudge to the Larsgaard parents.
Exactly. So yeah, but let's talk about investing for a wedding and whether that makes sense. Let's talk about timing first, Matt, because obviously, when we're talking about investing, timing is like one of the most important things that we have to discuss. And so it's kind of tough to know where to put this money because we don't know what Kristen's timeline is.
That's true.
Love happens when it happens, and you can't force it. We don't know.
You hear that, mom and dad? You can't force it.
and so, yeah, we'd say like it sounds like Kristen's doing an incredible job investing for her long-term future already, maxing out that Roth. She's making really smart money moves. So it seems to me that it would be a great idea to stash this money in a separate brokerage account to grow for Kristen's future wedding. But probably in less risky funds, not putting it 100% in stocks, right? You want to experience growth from the market in the coming years, but you don't want your future wedding plans to get massively downsized. Let's say if the market takes a beating. Let's say Kristen meets someone tomorrow and it is a whirlwind romance and they're getting married 5 months later. It's one of those things where on that timeline, you could easily have less money in that account than you started with.
Yeah, it's true. You know, the stock market's general trajectory is, of course, like up and to the right. But it's always possible that we see a correction and even a full on bear market that ends up lasting for a few years. That could be in the cards. And so it would suck to find the partner of your dreams. Be ready to tie the knot quickly and then see that your wedding fund balance has decreased over the past year. So a great solution, we think, are target date funds. They provide a solid solution so that you aren't too stock heavy. And so, Kristen, maybe for you, maybe a 2030 target date fund might be a good fund to put it in. Honestly, and that's not to say that, okay, by 2030, I am going to get married, but the further out that a target date fund is, the more weighted it will be towards stocks. And so if you want to go with a fund that's even more conservative, you could look to a 2025 fund. Even a 2020 fund will have more bonds. It'll be less volatile. But, of course, you're less likely to see growth were you to put it in a 2020 fund versus a 2030 fund.
I just kind of had the idea, what would a target date fund 2300 look like? Would that be just like all AI and Bitcoin? I don't know.
It would be NFTs. It would be in things that don't even exist yet.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I think one other suggestion worth pointing out to Kristen, too, is that iBonds could
be, of course,
a great spot for some of this money for the time being. For 10 grand of the money that you're holding on to, Kristen, because that is the limit every year of what you can, of how much in iBonds you are allowed to buy. And you know, we've been talking about these a lot, but they're still a great place for your money and for money that you don't need for at least the next year. And that is because you cannot take that money out within 12 months. And so, yeah, you'll be able to earn over 7% right now without taking on any risk. That rate will change in early summer. It could go down. It's not likely to go down a whole lot, but it will probably go down just a little bit. But it's going to make you more than you would earn in just that savings account. So that target date fund plus the iBond approach together is probably this great tag team strategy for some of those wedding funds for Kristen.
Plus, tying it up in an iBond, I feel that feels just a little more optimistic from a relational standpoint. It's just like, all right, you know what? 1 year from now, there's a good chance that this might happen. And so I like the optimism that comes with an iBond as well. So Kristen, best of luck to you and
in love and money.
Isn't that the new Thor movie?
I don't know.
Love and money. No, it's Love and Thunder, I think.
Okay.
But all right, let's go ahead and get to our next question. This one has to do with depreciation on an investment property.
Hey, Menjol. This is Ben from San Antonio. I was wondering your thoughts on the benefit of depreciating rental property. I recently learned about depreciation recapture, and it made me question the long-term benefit of depreciating my property, especially for those who are under the 25% cap applied to depreciation recapture. If you're ever in San Antonio, I recommend you check out Back Unturned Brewery. Not only do they have solid beer, but they give back to the homeless community by serving up some free pizza.
Wow, Matt, that's definitely a mission that we can get behind, right? Beer, then free pizza to folks who are in need.
I love it.
It's great.
Just beer and pizza in general, man. It's a good combo.
It is a good combo.
It's tough to beat.
Well, let's get on to Ben's question, even though I could stay in the slice right now. The depreciation that you get to take advantage of as a real estate investor is this perk that I think it's worth discussing more. So we've always touted that as actually one of the benefits of investing in real estate is that there are tax implications for real estate investors that help your bottom line. And how it works really is that the IRS says that your property is losing value steadily over 27 and a half years at the rate of, if you want to get really nerdy, 3.636% annually. Mm. And you get a tax break accordingly because your $150,000 property is being devalued every year by the government. The reality, however, is that your property is not steadily losing value. It's doing the opposite. But this IRS rule allows you to shelter some of that income from taxation. And Matt and I, we think that is a perk that is worth taking advantage of.
That's right. And just, you know, generally speaking, depreciation is a mechanism that is used in more ways than just in real estate, whether that be like office furniture and computers. That allows companies to use depreciation to their advantage when tax time rolls around as well. But Ben, he does make a good point because the IRS They give a nice benefit, but then they also take it away. And so, Ben, when you sell that house, part of the deal is that the IRS now wants to get paid on the depreciation dollars that you've been writing off over the years. If your property is now worth more than what you paid for it, which is most likely what's going to happen.
Let's hope so.
You will owe capital gains on the increase that you realize, typically at 15%, that long-term capital gains rate. But you'll also have to pay ordinary income tax on the depreciation that you took throughout the years. This is called depreciation recapture.
Yes.
Makes sense.
Yes, it does. And here's the thing. While you aren't required to claim depreciation on that property, you're flushing money down the toilet if you opt to forgo it. Basically, it's providing this current tax benefit, which will need to at least be partially repaid, kind of depending on specific circumstances.
That's right. So the mistaken belief around depreciation recapture, it occurs when people believe that if they, you know, avoid taking depreciation now, right? They avoid taking that 3.6 whatever percent every single year.
3.636.
Getting nerdy with it over there, are you?
I'm gonna tattoo that on my left arm.
Even if you don't take that depreciation now, when the time comes to sell the property, the IRS, like the default is that you had taken it. And so they are going to require you to repay that depreciation amount, whether or not you took that depreciation. And so you truly, like Joel said, you truly are flushing money down the toilet if you don't take advantage of this now, because they're going to require it of you later down the road.
And there are not many greater sins than flushing money down the toilet. not in my book. But and you're right, Matt, but here's the other thing. Is there are ways to completely avoid depreciation recapture altogether, which means you're getting that depreciation benefit every single year on your taxes, but then you never have to pay the piper. Ooh, let's talk about that, because the main way...
That's what I want.
Exactly. That is the way in which you are keeping all of your money outside of the sewage system. And so we say the main way to do that is to not sell the property ever. And it's not that there aren't reasons to sell a rental property sometimes, but if you're a forever holder of that property, that depreciation recapture tax bill never comes due because you're never actually getting rid of that investment. Or if you do decide to sell, there's still a way to avoid it then. Do it using a 1031 tax-free exchange method. That's another way to basically defer that tax. And so, yeah, because of these potential ways to avoid tax in the future, it makes sense, again, to take the bird in the hand, to take the tax break that's available to you today.
That's right. Yeah. So, Ben, ultimately, you're going to come out ahead if you depreciate that home, take the current tax break now, and then pay the IRS later if you sell the house. But we're recommending for you to potentially never sell the house.
That's kind of one of my personal mottos, is never sell houses.
Never sell it.
Yeah. And I don't know why. If that's like a great one, but it's my motto, at least.
Yeah. Well, I said why. I meant why not?
Yeah.
I wasn't asking you why. I wanted to mention, too, friend of the show, Chad Carson, he talks a lot about real estate, and he has this excellent video on depreciation and depreciation recapture when you sell a rental property that we'll link to in the show notes. But Ben, best of luck to you. I love hearing that you've got this rental property, that you are thinking through the different tax implications. You're wanting to inform yourself and be aware of some of these different rules before you find yourself in a situation where you're about to make the wrong move. I appreciate your question.
Yeah, and
that was Ben, a little dad joke for you.
Well, Ben can be forgiven too for not knowing the intricacies. Like, that is the one thing that gets frustrating about our financial system and the tax system, is that it's complicated and it is hard for people to understand. And something as nuanced as depreciation recapture needs a little explainer. And so, yeah, hopefully, Ben, that helps. And hopefully it helps you make smart decisions with your rental property or properties in the future. All right, Matt, we got a couple more questions to get to, including that one about tips for a newborn baby. We'll get to that and more right after this. Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So, if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. They are committed to high ethical standards and even had to pass a rigorous exam before they could become a CFP professional.
They offer financial planning and services that take a more comprehensive view of your financial and personal circumstances and are customized for your needs. Certified financial planner professionals can offer advice on a wide range of issues, like reviewing your investment portfolio's allocation, handling an inheritance, rolling over a company retirement plan, building education savings, and so much more.
That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org. I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach. Every single summer. We've already got that trip to St. Simon's on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host, or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
If you're listening to this podcast right now and you're a small business owner, listen up. Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're actually choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers. They do everything from hyper-targeting best fit prospects through campaign optimization. Upswell Marketing's unique approach includes direct mail, search engine marketing, and social media ads, and has fueled more than 10,000 small business success stories. Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies. Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
And now a word from the show's sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Don't worry, Betterment is here to help.
Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns, meaning when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal. Rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money is breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money the same way again.
Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
Right, we've got a couple more questions here before this episode is over. We're going to talk about babies here in a second, but first, backdoor Roth IRAs.
Hi, Matt and Joel. This is Allie from Boston. I wanted to thank you so much for doing this awesome podcast. I started listening probably about a year and a half ago and have gone back and listened to every single episode you've ever done. It's really helped my wife and I to turn our finances around and feel confident with our financial future. A question for you. We both went to school for a long time and just recently have solid salaries and are working to build up our retirement accounts, which we're definitely behind on. We both have 403Bs through work, which are actually pretty good. They're through Fidelity and we're both in the Fidelity 500 index funds. We've maxed out our contribution to those and so decided to also open IRAs. Our income is over the limit for a Roth IRA, so we open traditional IRAs, but it's also over the deduction limit for the traditional IRA. I've read that we can fill out a form for our non-deductible contributions that we submit every year and then can keep track of when we take money out way down the road. My question is, if we put $6,000 into a traditional IRA that is a non-deductible contribution, can I then just roll that over into a Roth IRA and not have to pay taxes on the rollover? We'd love to have money in a Roth to diversify our retirement accounts. It seems like this is the most straightforward way to deal with our non-deductible contributions, but also maybe a little bit sketchy. Would love your thoughts. Thank you so much.
All right, Allie, thanks so much for that question. And Joel, first we should mention that Allie is who donated those Trillium beers to us that we enjoyed at the end of last year and the beginning of this year. So Allie, thank you so much for those beers. We really appreciate it.
Oh my gosh, Allie's the best.
Like the best beers we've had. But man, we are so glad that the podcast has been helpful for y'all. 403Bs definitely can be fee laden, but yours is with Fidelity, so that is great news. They're one of the few 403B providers that aren't feeing customers to death, so we are glad to hear that those are available to you. But let's go ahead and talk about the backdoor Roth IRA for a minute, because this is the common name for what Allie is referring to. This has been a strategy that a lot of folks have used to get money into a Roth IRA without actually being eligible to contribute to a Roth IRA. While that's the case, it has come under fire recently. Some politicians want the backdoor Roth to die, basically. There was an attempt to get rid of it in the most recent Build Back Better bill that failed to pass.
I'll say that three times fast.
I'm not going to try. But that didn't pass last year. And so this could still be something that gets axed. And we will certainly let folks know if that happens. But we're just not sure how long that backdoor Roth will continue to be a thing. It's on the chopping block. So doing it while you can, Allie, is definitely the way to go.
Yes, exactly. While the portal is still open, jump through it. And yeah, Allie mentioned that maybe it's a sketchy way to get money into a Roth IRA, but that is not the case. The IRS has actually given their stamp of approval, noting that it's a perfectly legal investing move. And again, Matt, like you said, at least for now, yeah, we don't know how long that will continue to
sketchy,
be the case.
Sketchy name, being the backdoor Roth, but completely legit.
Exactly. And so, yes, we would say, Allie, make hay while the sun shines, or make contributions while the sun shines. And the thing is, making that backdoor Roth contribution is actually really easy. I think sometimes people overestimate the level of difficulty on this one, but it's like, if you're trying to, on a scale of 1 to 10, it's like a 2.5, right?
Yeah,
it's,
I'd give it a 3.
It's
yeah,
pretty simple. So you put money into a traditional IRA with your current brokerage account. Sticking with Fidelity is a solid move, right? Because they're a great company. And then once the funds have settled in that account, might take a few days, typically, 5 to 7 days, you can then make that conversion into a Roth. And you should be able to do all of this online. And Matt, I actually just did my backdoor Roth with Fidelity for this year.
Heck yeah, proof is in the pudding.
Exactly.
This dude has done it.
And it was really simple. You sock $6,000 into a traditional IRA. You're not going to take the tax benefit from it because you're not eligible for that. And then once those funds appear in your account, like I said, it takes about a week, you transfer it into a Roth. Like, there's a simple button to click. It's really just that simple.
Yeah, the backdoor Roth, it's really a simple maneuver, especially if you don't already have a deductible IRA from previous years. And so, like Joel said, the mechanics of it are really simple. But then just make sure that you fill out IRS Form 8606 when filling out your taxes so that the IRS knows that you're making non-deductible contributions. It's not like when you make those contributions to your IRA, there's an option. Is this a traditional IRA or a Roth IRA or a non-deductible IRA? That comes down to you and the IRS. This isn't between you and Fidelity. But if you do already have a traditional IRA with deductible funds already in place, this complicates the formula a little bit when it comes to figuring out how much you owe in taxes. This might be an instance where it would be beneficial to hire a tax professional, because the formula does get pretty complicated. But Allie, best of luck to you. It is as simple as you're making it sound, based on the fact that you're talking about, starting to contribute to an IRA, maybe for the first time, just immediately convert those funds. Get going with that backdoor Roth and know that it is totally legitimate.
Most definitely easy peasy. All right, Matt, let's get to our last question for this episode. This one comes from a listener who just had a baby, and he's wondering, how does he not spend too much money on that baby?
Hey, Matt and Joel. This is David from Maryland. Been listening since episode 3 and haven't stopped since. My question to you both is, what money-saving baby hacks do you have that listeners could use? With a little one on the way, I figured the HTM Duo would have some awesome tips. Thanks, guys.
David, if you're looking to save the most money possible, then the best money tip we could give you would be to never have gotten pregnant in the first place, because babies and kids are expensive. The Bureau of Labor Statistics says that it's like $250,000 to raise a kid to adulthood. We don't think it actually costs nearly that much.
Not if you're frugal and intentional.
Yeah, but expect those costs to start ramping up, because they do get expensive. And of course, we're joking about not having kids at all. Between Joel and I, we have a combined 7 kids in total. They're truly a blessing. So congrats on your new baby that's on the way. Yeah, babies are the best. We are pumped for you.
I wouldn't trade my babies in for $250,000, even if I got offered that deal tomorrow, Matt. I wouldn't do it. There's no way.
What if the IRS increases the BLS determines that in reality it's like $350,000?
Well, all right.
Yes. Don't want to tempt you.
I'll have to second guess it then.
Maybe number 3.
Definitely not getting rid of that one. All right, well, let's get to the money-saving baby hacks. And one worth noting is that your friends and family typically want to buy you stuff when you have a baby, especially that first baby. Mm-hmm. And that's super sweet. So there's often a bunch of stuff you need in the beginning, the first days. And so it's just massively helpful to have baby showers and to have other people helping to fund that baby from the get-go.
And they're just fun, too. I mean, yeah. Early on, like, yeah, I don't know. Showers are a ton of fun in my book.
So, yeah, I mean, really when it comes down to it, get a registry going. Make sure to ask for the stuff that you definitely want new for those events. And I say the things you definitely want new because there are a lot of things that you're going to want to prioritize buying used yourself. But so make sure to get the stuff you're like, no, definitely want new stuff and put that on the registry. But simultaneously, remember that you don't have to get every single item on the list that you see around the internet. There's all sorts of like 25 things you must buy before you have a baby. And it's like, I mean, some of those things like, yeah, but certainly not all those things. There are a lot of gadgets that you don't really need. You don't need a bottle warmer. I'm just going to tell you, like, you don't need that. And some people will tell you it's a must have. Yeah. It's not a must have. And how long a bottle warmer's been around? Like 8 years? Like, come on.
So funny. Yeah. It makes me think of like the wipes warmer as well. That's one that we got. I think maybe that may have been one that was gifted to us. And, you know, I think we used it for a little bit, but then we're just like, too much of a pain in the butt. Yeah. It's like, sorry, cold wipes for your bottom this winter.
Exactly. And so, yeah, you'd be surprised, I think, at how little it actually takes to raise a happy and healthy baby. It's not as much as the headlines suggest. And, and then a lot of the gadgets or items that you're told that you need, a lot of them are not necessary.
What about the giraffe? There's like that little toy giraffe that is like a classic like chewing toy or something like that. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah. It's a French origin, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I think everyone gets it because they're like, oh, I want my kids to be like, you know, Francophiles or something like that. But like, that's one of those
I
things.
I want them to be cultured.
That we got ourselves, literally for ourselves, you know, for us to feel good about it, not necessarily because any of our kids actually chewed on the dang thing.
Right.
But I will say, for some folks, you know, there is a pretty large upfront cost when it comes to babies, and I'm talking about the hospital bill. If you have insurance like most folks do, it's important to review that up front. You know, talk to your insurance provider, talk to your medical provider as well, figure out what sort of out-of-pocket costs that you might face, and then push back on either procedures or appointments that may not be necessary.
This sounds like very much Matt advice. The guy who doesn't go to the dentist for a decade.
It's like, and he's like, you don't need that.
You don't gotta go to the doctor. Just give birth at home.
Overrated. And I don't know how many jokes you and I threw back and forth when our wives were pregnant about, you know, taking care of it at home. But
our wives did not find them funny.
They did not enjoy those jokes. But like, I'm thinking about like the 3D ultrasound, you know, like that might be pretty cool. But depending on how much you're going to have to pay for that, like, it might be pretty easy to convince yourself that the muddy blob baby face printout just isn't worth it. And, you know, if you are paying a lot more out of pocket, remember that you can negotiate with the provider by agreeing to an upfront cash price. But even if they're not willing to negotiate, realize that it's not that big of a deal to switch providers. You can even head to a birthing center where experienced midwives, where they can give you an excellent experience, you know, oftentimes experiences that might be more in line with what you actually have in mind. And then not to mention that they're oftentimes much more affordable as well. That's definitely a path we took, and we were able to save a ton of money compared to what we're paying for other births at the hospital.
Yes, a lot of people say that is the best combo of experience and money saving. Right?
Oh, yeah. So, absolutely.
And then, okay, once the baby comes home, let's talk about that too, because to be honest, breastfeeding is going to save a lot of money as well. Formula is expensive, although if you're going to get formula, Costco, I would say, is a great place to turn for that. But Matt and I, we're not ladies, so we're not going to dwell on that for a long time. Just putting that out there. And then also cloth diapers. And a lot of people, Matt, they hear that and they're like, gross. Not going to do that. But the thing is, cloth diapers have gotten a lot better. I think if you think of cloth diapers of 25, 30 years ago, you're like, yeah, not doing that.
Yeah, I see that's pictures nasty. Of me in cloth diapers in the 80s, and it was just literally like a rag with like an elastic rubber band like around my waist. I'm like, how did that do anything actually that was sanitary, you know?
No, I don't think it was sanitary. But they've gotten a whole lot better, and you and I have both done the cloth diaper thing.
Totally.
And yeah, when you use them for multiple years, you can save over $1,000 over the cost of disposable diapers. And then let's say David is planning on having more kids. Like, they only save you more money with every other kid that you put them on.
Totally.
So that's definitely something worth looking into. And that's one of those things you can also put on your registry, because it's like these cute diapers.
They are really, really cute. And you get them in different colors and,
patterns, designs, whatever you want. And, and if you go the disposable diaper out, make sure you're getting the affordable ones like Aldi, Target, or Costco. Just remember, diapers are really good for one thing or two things, I guess.
And number one or number two.
You're going to toss them in the trash, so don't spend too much time agonizing or thinking that you got to get the best ones or the organic version or anything like that.
I mean, the different companies out there who can afford advertising, they make it seem like that these are going to be diapers that you like pass down to future generations, that these are like heirloom diapers or something like that. But like,
or it's
no.
Like, remember you wore these when you were a baby.
These are just going in the trash. And so what is the most affordable way that you can effectively capture the things that you don't want captured, but you know, by your rug
on your floor?
Do that in whatever way is most affordable for you. But moving on, you know, like Joel, you mentioned showers. Like, hopefully some of the things that you want new, you can, you know, can be provided for you by friends and family. But then, you know, for everything else that you need, going the used route is where it's at. Remember, babies, they don't really care whether or not something is brand new or not. Like, even kids when they're younger, they don't know.
My crib's not named brand. Take it back.
Dude, seriously, speaking of cribs, like, that's literally an item that we bought used, I want to say, for like $40 or $60 before we had our first kid. It was a used mini crib. And so it's not even a full-size crib. It's like this miniature version. It's the dimensions are a lot smaller. But all four of our kids slept in that crib. It was perfectly suitable, and that's the route that we would recommend for folks. Facebook Marketplace, that's a great spot to turn. And keep in mind, too, that there are different stores that specialize in used children's items.
Oh, those are the best.
But, you know, it might be even better to ask friends who have kids that are just a little bit older for their hand-me-downs. That has saved us a bundle. There are two or three families that we're close with who drop off a garbage bag, or two or three, full of clothes a couple times a year. And that helps us to avoid buying new stuff at Target. Even borrowing certain items can save you a ton. I'm thinking about how with our fourth kid, at that point, we were, you know, when we had Westy, we didn't think we're going to have any more kids necessarily. And so we had already gotten rid of a lot of the baby stuff.
It was a shocking surprise.
I mean, it was partially a surprise. But in this case, we had gotten rid of the car carrier, you know, like the baby seat for the car. And we knew that they hadn't been in any wrecks. They were no longer used, or not, at the time at least, weren't using their baby seat. And so we borrowed that from them for like a year. We're done with it. It still had plenty of time left before it was, quote unquote, expired. And we gave it back to them. And I don't know if they're hanging on to it now for if they have another kid or if they've given it, you know, or sold it to somebody else. But the window of, you know, the period of time that we use certain items with our kids are quickly closing. You know, I mean, there's some things that kids wear just a couple times. There are certain toys that they only play with a couple times. And so finding different ways, more affordable ways to acquire those items, whether it be borrowing or, you know, buying them used, that's what we would recommend.
Yeah, I feel like the gap between new and used prices on kids' stuff is bigger than almost anything else.
Yeah,
because it has such a limited time frame that you're using it.
Yeah.
Like, you might buy a clothing item and they might wear it four or five times, and then they're growing so quickly that they're done with it. And so people are willing to give that away really quickly. And that's one of the cool things about the society that we live in, is it's so easy to find that stuff. It's so easy to sign up for alerts for your Buy Nothing group where people are giving those things away. And it'll save you a lot of money when it comes to what you're going to spend on your kid's wardrobe or other items that you're going to put in the room where they're sleeping, the nursery.
And another quick thing to remember, too, is that you and your partner, your relationship is so incredibly important. And what, Joel, one thing that you and I, that we have done since we had our first kids over 8 years ago, is pretty early on, we instituted a date night swap. Those first couple months, the babies, they sleep no matter what. So you can put them in the little baby car carrier and take them to the restaurant. But after, at least for us, it was like after month three, they're too aware as to what's going on. And so you want to leave them at home when you're going out on your date nights. That swap has saved us so much money.
Have you ever
thought about this?
Yeah, well, because babysitting is essentially, at this point, half the cost of a date.
Yes, seriously. And so, I mean, I'm, you know, estimating that you would pay about $50 for a couple, you know, 2.5 hours. You know, that's about how long we spend on our date nights. Every single week, either Kate and I are going out on a date and you come over and, you know, hold the place down. And then the next week, it'll be your date night. And then I head over to y'all's place. But if you think about $50 a pop, right? So you're looking at about $100 a month. You're looking at $1,200 a year. Times eight, you know, our oldest kids are older than 8 years old. That's $9,600. That's almost $10,000 that we've saved just in date nights, the ability to go out affordably. And then not to mention, you know, think about how much better of a place your relationship is in because you've been able to go on regular date nights with Emily.
Yep, I agree. Yeah, I think, yeah, that date night swap has been almost invaluable, although you just calculated the value. And so it's been $10,000 worth of value.
But you can't place value on how much better of a position your relationship is in. So, David, I guess, you know, my recommendation here then for you is to find somebody else who might be in a similar stage of life as you, like Joel and I have. Well, you know, we've got each other. This is something we were able to set up early on. And I literally can't think of anything else in my life that has been as regular and consistent as our date nights. I mean, literally, we never miss it unless it's like Christmas Day. Yeah. You know, if like if y'all are out of town or if we're out of town for Christmas or for some other holiday, if like one of us is off at the beach or something like that, we'll miss it. But basically, only like 3 weeks out of the year is when we'll skip it. And so, David, yeah, hopefully that is something that you will be able to implement in your life as well.
No doubt. All right. Well, and David, best of luck to you bringing a new baby into this world and then hopefully not spending too much money on that baby while giving it and showering it with the amount of love that it deserves.
Absolutely.
All right, Matt, let's get back to the beer that we had on this episode.
Let's
this one
do it.
Was called Hatch Me Outside by Crosstown Brewing out of Memphis, Tennessee.
I would have called it Hatch Me If You Can, Leo movie.
Exactly. That would have been
Tom Hanks. Who else was in that movie? Do you remember?
No, those are the only two I remember.
Yeah, I think that they were it.
It's been a long time. but what were your thoughts on this one, man?
Okay, so I noticed here, I saved a little bit of my beer. Do you want to try some of mine? Because I looked over at yours, and yours was super clear. And I noticed when I looked down at mine, it was super cloudy. I gave you the first pour, and I don't know if you're going to stop while we were recording, but I reached over and stole some of your beer because I wanted to give it a little bit of a taste.
It was definitely awkward. Or podcasting.
but how much more chili flavor do you taste in mine compared to yours? Because I looked at yours and I gave it a little taste and it tasted more like a blonde ale, which is what this is. But I felt like it was lacking some of that Green Hatch pepper flavor. And so for me, like at least in my cup over here, that pepper flavor was incredibly strong. Yeah. I mean, kind of reminded me of the shishitos that we will grow in our garden and blister them up on the griddle during the summers. Mm. But I don't know if I've ever had a beer that's had pepper flavor in it like this. Certainly I've had beers that have had heat. This one didn't have as much heat, but it had more of that like that Green Hatch chili flavor going on.
Yeah, I thought it added a lot. And yeah, I know yours was slightly different color. I guess, yeah, based on the way you pour a beer out of a can,
a lot of times
you're dividing
it. We try to go back and forth, and that way we get an equally, you know, sedimenty beer. In my case, though, I guess I got all the sediment.
But I thought mine did have like a nice chili flavor going on, and it kind of like reminded me of cornbread a little bit.
Oh,
which
with a little jalapeno slices in it.
Love me some good cornbread.
All right,
and I just think that we should be putting peppers in beer more often. It's one of those things where I'm like, yeah, give me more beers with peppers in them. And like one of my all time favorites I had recently again from Wrecking Bar. It's their Cinco de Siberius Maximus or whatever. It's a Russian Imperial Stout with peppers in it, and it's got more of a kick than this, but it was kind of nice just to have like a laid back blonde ale with some peppers going in there too, just to kind of shake things up. And yeah, really, I liked it.
It really worked with this specific style of beer as well. Like with the Cinco de Siberius, it's hot, like it's spicy, and it varies month to month. And so I've had it before where I could barely finish it because the peppers that they stuck in that thing were so fresh and spicy. Whereas this, I felt like it was more of like just that mild flavor, which I felt like went well with the blonde ale. It's just kind of real chill, laid back, versus when you've got some heat in a beer, I think having some sweetness to balance with it goes a long way. And I think that's where the Cinco de Siberius, that's where that one really shines. But yeah, big thanks to your brother-in-law for donating this one to the show. This one, again, by Crosstown Brewing Company. So if you're ever in Memphis, check them out.
All right, Matt, that's going to do it for this episode. For listeners who want show notes, links to anything that we mentioned on this episode, you can find those up on our website at howtomoney.com.
That's right. And a quick thing again, we've mentioned this previously, but a reminder for folks, if you listen to us on Spotify, a reminder that you can head over there and rate our show. So we would appreciate a solid rating over there. And of course, for everyone else who listens elsewhere, a solid rating and review over at Apple Podcasts would help immensely. Joel, that's going to be it, buddy, for this episode. Until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.
Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.